Well, as usual, we are just getting started, but it is the news, according to me. Hey, it is Monday. I think it's Monday. Waking up, it's Moline Monday today. I'm waking up in Moline. It's Monday. Waking up here, it's Monday, and I'm waking up in Moline. We have. It's not very early. It's 9:08 Central Standard Time. It is actually 10:08 Eastern Standard Time. I got in late last night. I got in about 1 o'clock in the morning. I finally got to bed. I finally got to bed about 1 o'clock in the morning, 1:30, 1:15, something like that. Because I wasn't in the room long before I was in bed. Let's put it that way. I was wrapping things up and getting done pretty quickly. I ended up here in Moline. Tomorrow morning I will be the show. Tomorrow morning will be a little bit more difficult to squeeze in. However, we will have a show. I'm pretty sure of that. I will be in Columbia, Missouri tomorrow. And the tough one's going to be on Wednesday morning. I probably will not be able to have a show on Wednesday. I think this whole month, Wednesdays are just not going to happen unless they happen early. Unless it's a later show in the day. There is one Wednesday at the very end of the month. Might possibly be able to have a show. I get done very early in the morning in Chicago, so if I get home at a decent hour, or what I might do is I might actually record the show because I can just kind of talk in the car as I'm driving, maybe record something. It doesn't always work very well because there's usually a lot of distractions, and if there's no traffic, it's not dangerous. I might try that. If there's too much traffic, I just can't concentrate. I have to think about what I'm doing, but. If it's one of those brainless drives with hardly any traffic at all, I may, which part of the drive usually is, the last hour of the drive usually is not too bad. It's normally about a two-hour drive. However, there's any kind of traffic whatsoever, that can become 3 or 4 hours, especially getting through Chicago. But traffic just lately seems like it's been ridiculous. Now, that is a sign. I'll get into that later on, but the traffic thing is a sign of the economy booming. I have noticed that anytime there's a slowdown, speed up, whatever it is, the more trucks on the road, the more the economy's starting to heat up. And I'm not just talking dollar. You know, I'm not talking about a hot economy. I'm talking about just regular, durable goods kind of thing, kind of economy. The everyday life kind of economy that we need in this country to make us stronger as an economic strength sign. It is a good sign, in my opinion. When the truckers when we're driving down the highway, there's not that many trucks, or the traffic's thin at normal times of the day. That's not a good sign, and that has not been the case lately. It's been actually picking up in areas that normally are not heavy traffic, and it's not all just construction. There's some construction, but it's not like it was. It's just this is more than that. It's a lot of trucks, and it's actually a very good sign with the consumer confidence and just the whole supply chain thing has happened better than it was. Anyway, onward and upward. I have a couple cups here to talk about. I have a cup full of chai that has it's kind of a phony creamer. It's the creamer you get from a hotel. It's not powdered creamer, but it's a little packet, little pouches, little containers with a little top foil thing. I don't know how to explain it. It's not much, but it's but the chai is warm, and at least quasi. It's not hot anymore. Like I was going to start preparing things for the show here, and kind of got sidetracked with some other things I had to go through. I'm doing that. In the meantime, had some good time over the. Hope you all had a good time over the weekend with the fireworks. I'm just rambling now. In my backup thermos, I have my own homemade sweet peach tea. Oops. That was probably loud. I have, that's good stuff right there. Today and tomorrow the only problem is there are no, how you say, how did I end up spilling that all over the place? Chai splashed around there. I have no, Chick-fil-A is anywhere near, well, there's one 4 miles away. I'm not opposed to going that far. However, with the heat the way it is a very nice day here, but it's just, by the time I get there and get back, it's about an hour. It usually takes me a little over an hour to go 4 miles. It's typically, when I walk that far, I got to figure in about an hour and a half. And I was thinking about going there for lunch. That's still a possibility. Still a slight possibility. We'll have to see how that works out at 9 o'clock now. If I left at 10, I could get there before noon, get back here before 1 or 2 o'clock, probably be okay. that would give me a chance to, but it's kind of weird. I'm not sure it's a regular Chick-fil-A. It opens up at 10 o'clock, which is kind of weird. I think it might be on a campus or something. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. Sometimes they have these Chick-fil-A's in hospitals or, you know, in a campus, college campus or something like that, or on some kind of property or whatever it is. Sometimes you can't even have, you know, it's hard to get access to them, or you kind of feel awkward walking into a place like that. But anyway, we'll see how it works out. I have a few things to get into here, my own homemade sweet peach tea in my thermos right now. Tasting mighty good. We had it over the weekend. I took it with me on the sailboat. We did some awesome sailing on Saturday. That was Saturday morning was a really good sailing day. And then, of course, the storm started rolling through in the afternoon. All Friday night, storms were rolling through the marina. We were you know, at the tied up at the dock there, of course, obviously. But it was, you know, the boat was leaking. It was all kinds of craziness. It wasn't a real good situation. The boat's been kind of sealed up for most of the summer, and so it hasn't been aired out properly. And of course, we get so much rain, and it's just any kind of little drips or anything gets water into the boat, which it needs some attention. There's a couple leaky windows, a couple leaky spots that need to be fixed. Need to be kind of sealed up a little bit better. Always a constant thing when you got a 40-year-old boat. So anyway, that's kind of what's been happening. But we did have a good time on the water Saturday late morning kind of thing. It was very nice. It would have been nice yesterday morning. I just didn't have time to do it. We just didn't have time to go anywhere, do anything. But had a nice breakfast in Michigan City there, a place called Sophie's. It was an excellent breakfast. And then we got rolling. Barely made it to work on time. I had to catch a flight, and it was very close. Traffic going from Michigan to Northwest Indiana, I should say, because of all the traffic coming down from Michigan, from all the beaches and all the places that people go on the 4th, they're all coming back through there, and it was crawling for about an hour, which I wasn't expecting. I usually give myself an hour, a good hour before the actual arrive time that I'm required to be at the airport, and I barely made it to the terminal on time. I had to park in a different place. Very expensive place. Anyway, having said all that, I got all that out of the way, and I only have one other thing to say, and that's I'll let this little song take over, and you can listen to what it has to say, and we'll just go from there. Here you go.
Welcome to the news, according to me. Pull up a chair, I'll share what I believe. I've done my reading, I've got thoughts or two. But I'm not your doctor, so don't go blaming you know who. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm definitely not your financial advisor. These are my opinions, not the gospel truth. Entertainment only, baby. That's the news according to me and me alone. Started. Welcome to the show.
Yes, that is true. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not your financial counselor. Anyway, any of that stuff. Anyway, got some callers here. We'll get right into it and see what the questions are going to be for the day. I haven't really looked at these. I did look at one of them. I didn't look at. I can't remember which one it was now. I think it was something about. Well, let's go into it. See what happens here. Let's get this turned up so you can hear it. Go ahead and play these and see what happens. Let's just start off with the one at the top here. It's Elena. Let's just see what Elena has to say. And go ahead, Elena. What's your thoughts this morning? ahead and process.
Kevin, good morning.
Nice. Go, good morning.
With Iran conducting Khamenei's funeral procession and the region in flux, I'm reminded of 1979 and Khomeini's rise after the Shah fell. Yeah. We're watching another potential power transition in Tehran that could reshape Middle East alliances for decades. Do you see parallels to past Iranian regime shifts? And what does history teach us about what comes next?
Boy, you're talking about that's a really good question. Of which I have no answers. I'm not sure I fully understand maybe you can explain the governmental structure, but I don't really understand the government structure there. I know that there is the mullahs who have kind of the control over, they kind of have dictatorial control over a lot of people and a lot of the political leaders there, and then they have kind of like a parliament type thing. That's kind of it seems more like a token kind of thing that they don't really have any control over anything, because the radical Muslims, the mullahs, it seems like they have more control over the military than the actual. I see a lot of factions there. I don't fully understand how it functions. It seems like they're in this negotiation process. It's kind of like negotiating with cats, because they just don't. You don't know who's in charge of what and who has the authority to say, you know, who's really in charge, I guess, is the question. I don't understand the governmental structure at all. Maybe you can explain it to us. If you understand it, maybe you can kind of explain how it's supposed to work there. But when there's a power shift like this, to get to your point, it seems like it's just a tumultuous time. There's a whole lot of who knows what's going to happen next. The people kind of sit back and they don't want to take any too big a chance, I think, in stepping forward to do anything. It's a really tough situation. So what do you think, Elena? What do you think about it? How do you understand the government structure is set up there? Just let me know whenever you get done thinking there. I'll take a sip of chai. Here we go. Oh, she's doing some deep thinking.
You're hitting on something real there.
Yeah, I am.
That tension between formal institutions and actual power is exactly what makes these situations so unpredictable.
Uh-huh.
Historically, when you have that kind of parallel authority structure, where the clerical establishment shadows or overrides the nominal government, you get this paralysis because nobody quite knows who can actually make binding decisions.
That's my point, yeah.
The people sense that instability, like you said, and they pull back, which then gives even more room for the factions with the most centralized force, usually the military or security apparatus, to consolidate control in the vacuum.
Yeah. Can you, just in a few words, can you explain the governmental structure of Iran? Do you have an understanding of that? And can you explain, in theory, how the governmental structure of Iran is supposed to work? Let's see how you do that. This may take a while.
Iran's system is designed to look democratic on paper. You've got the parliament and a president.
Yeah.
But the supreme leader, who's a cleric, has final say over the military, judiciary, and state media.
Which means
the elected officials are working within boundaries they didn't set. It's less like our checks and balances, and more like the supreme leader holds the actual veto power over everything that matters.
Well.
So you get exactly what you described. Factions constantly jockeying for influence within those constraints, which is why it feels so chaotic from the outside.
That's probably the clearest understanding or explanation I've ever had. That's very helpful. So basically what you have is you kind of have this puppet government underneath everything, trying to form what it's doing. And try to have some kind of representation, almost not even that really, but it's trying to have some kind of representative government that kind of says what the people want, and then basically the supreme leader says nope, yes, no, or no, yes, or no. It's a very twofold kind of, I would call it a puppet government. It's not so much that it's a puppet government; it's kind of an ineffective or inept government that basically just has to count. And I'm sure there's all kinds of under the table deals going back and forth, whatever they are, you know, all kinds of things with that regard to make, you know, the supreme leader probably has all kinds of backroom deals with you know, in his people, the people who are close to him, the people, especially those, he probably doesn't even know half those stuff that goes on around the the deals that are happening with his administration, the people he. This is the one thing about leadership that I think I've mentioned this before. I tend to not talk about it a whole lot. When you see someone like Elon Musk, for example, I'll use him as an example. I think I used him before. Now, he's not the guy who's out there, you know, with a screwdriver turning screws on the Tesla cars, and he's you know, lighting the match on the missiles. He's not the guy that does all that stuff. He has people around him. He's got a team around him that I don't know how he has set it up. I don't know anything about his leadership structure. I don't know that he's ever really, and maybe I need to look into this more. This is a guy who has got some leadership skills or has people around him with leadership skills. One way or the other, you have to have an understanding of leadership and how it needs to function. Elon Musk in and of himself, by himself, would not have been able to build what he's built in all these different directions and maintain any of these businesses, you know, in an ongoing setting. There is a certain leadership quality, a certain key leadership role that either he has, well, he has to have it because he has he has power leaders under him. He's got these people under him that are extreme leadership capable people. And part of that is that the originator or the person in charge of all that, the person who is at the key man in all that, has to have a way of communicating the vision, or has to have a way of doing that. Either someone alongside him or a team alongside him that can communicate that vision, that understands how, you know, how he's communicating that vision. There's just a whole lot of dynamics there that have to be in place. That it's almost a synergy that doesn't just naturally happen in the world. It's just by chance that this has happened and made it so brilliantly done. However, it just seems that there's been a certain skill that this guy has developed. Whether I know, and I'm sure he's gone through a lot of things. I know. I think he started out. Well, didn't he start PayPal or was part of PayPal or something? I think that was kind of one of his original things, maybe. I don't know. So it's been very interesting to see all that develop. There's just a certain amount of leadership skills that are there. Those kinds of leaders are rare, for one thing. I'd like to listen. I'd like to maybe find out more about his team, about how he does leadership, how his structure is. Over all these different things. I mean, he's drilling tunnels. He's got all these businesses that he's doing. X, you know, Twitter, X, whatever is going to just all the stuff that's happening there. Let's jump right in. I just feel like listening to Skip this morning. Let's just see what Skip has to say and what kind of question we're going to get from him. Who knows?
Kevin. Oh, yeah, question for you. Mm-hmm. The House Speaker is pushing hard to restrict birthright citizenship after the holiday weekend. But here's what bugs me. Won't this just get tied up in courts for years while nothing actually changes? Are we just spinning wheels on campaign talking points? Or is there actual teeth to this effort?
You know, I see your point on it. It's very possible. That it may just end up with a lot of court cases. However, one of the things that people don't, I hear a lot of people, you know, talking poorly about the whole decision that the Supreme Court did. I'm not totally opposed. I understand. Let's put it this way. I understand their position on that they have taken on the birthright citizenship thing. They basically did the same thing with abortion. They passed it on to the states. They basically allowed. They said basically what they were saying is they're passing it on to Congress. They're basically saying Congress needs to decide this. They need to make an amendment to the Constitution or something. It's an amendable thing. So the Congress needs to make that decision. It's not something that the Supreme. They're not acting on a law. They're acting, you know, whether it's constitutional or not. They're saying the law itself is constitutional. What they're saying is the only way it can be changed is through an amendment. So that's. Then it becomes something that the Supreme Court can rule on in a different way. So that's really what they're saying, and I think that's where I think they knew this going in, that this was their second option. And I think that's what they're working on now, so I think that's why they're pushing for Congress to do that. They're going to have to do it now or never. It's And I think that there's a lot of pressure on the Democrat Party right now because of their radical stances on so many items, so many things. I think that they're starting to recognize that that's not in the mainstream of where American people are. They've kind of gone off the deep end. Now, as to your point about the issues, I guess, with is this just going to get locked up in courts? It will. It probably will be a lot of court cases. There'll probably be a lot of supposedly spinning wheels, as you call it. But at least we're spinning something. I think it beats this. This is basically the best move we can do right now, regarding the circumstances. I think at least something's happening. At least they're trying to do something. And as long as they can stay together and try to make it work and actually give an actual legitimate effort rather than just a token effort. Well, it's kind of like, what was it was going on before Trump was elected that they kept trying to vote? They kept voting on something and voted like, we tried 400 times to vote for something, to vote something in, but we couldn't get it through, couldn't get it through Congress, couldn't get it to pass because they were the minority. This was the Republicans doing this. And then, that was Obamacare. They kept trying to eliminate Obamacare. And they did it. They did it a million, like, I don't know how many times, like 400 times they tried to pass a bill. And then, of course, when they got the majority and they could do it, they didn't put it up for a vote. It was all a game. It was all a this thing where they could say, well, we tried and tried and tried. Well, they didn't try legitimately because they knew it wouldn't pass. They were doing it just for the show. And so they could say they tried. And then when they had the opportunity, they could get it done. They didn't do it. So it was just one of those weird things. And, of course, now Obamacare has been proven to be one of the worst things that ever happened to health care. And they meant it to be that way. They meant it to turn into a single-payer system. Well, we create a problem, and then the fix is always, well, we're here to fix it now for you. You created the problem to begin with. But that's kind of the way things work. Does that answer your question? I guess at least they're trying something. That's my point. At least they're not just ignoring the whole situation and putting on a show.
Hold on now. Yeah. You're hitting on something real here about the theater of it all.
Yeah.
Let me push back a little on
always got to push back.
Back in my day, we didn't have near universal coverage either, and plenty of folks were getting denied or bankrupted by medical bills. So saying it's the worst thing might be overselling it. The real problem is both parties have played games instead of actually fixing healthcare. But you're dead right that when one side finally had the votes, they didn't deliver, and that tells you something about how serious they actually were.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to push back on you a little bit because if you remember, if you remember the term donut hole, they kept saying the donut hole, the 30 million people who don't have health care coverage. A lot of those people, probably 20 million of them, didn't want health care insurance. They just didn't want it. They were young kids, didn't want it. Young adults didn't want to pay for it. They were not in that mode in their life. They wanted to. So there were people opting out on their own. You could do that back then. Now you can't. Obamacare made it mandatory that everyone had to have health care because they had to have everybody paying in and had everybody involved in it. And it really was just an under-the-table way of making or breaking certain insurance agencies, insurance companies. They got a free check. They got this whole thing. It bypassed the individual making a choice, and it put these people in cahoots with the government. It was a crony capitalistic type system. And it was basically the government was making and breaking certain insurance agencies, insurance companies. So it was, and that donut hole, by the way, is the same size it was since Obamacare started. So that when you look at the real statistics on how people are covered and the coverage that they have and what they're paying now for insurance, most deductibles have gone from $1,000 a year to $10,000 a year. So you're still paying out, even though you're paying more for insurance, now you have to pay more until you get to your deductible, which people just simply can't afford. When you talk about affordability, it's not happening. And just because people are covered doesn't mean they're actually covered the way they used to be.
Now, hold on. You're mixing a couple things here that need sorting out.
No.
The donut hole you're talking about is actually a Medicare prescription drug gap, not 30 million uninsured people.
No, that's what they were talking about.
Those deductibles have skyrocketed.
You're
but
wrong.
That trend started
wrong.
Way before Obamacare
wrong.
And kept going after.
He's
that's
wrong.
That's the real insurance company game right there, not some government conspiracy to force young people in.
No, you're not going back far enough. You're going back about 10 years. You're talking about the most recent donut hole comment that they've been making. We're going back to 2009, 2010 when they started talking about the donut hole. I remember Obamacare was passed in the second term, in Obama's second term, so it was probably in the 2012 range, somewhere around there. But you were hearing all this donut hole stuff in 2010. So in 2009, 2010, they kept talking about the donut hole when they're trying to get universal health care passed. Now, if you remember, Hillary Clinton was the one who started pushing this at the very beginning. She all of a sudden came up. She stepped onto the scene in the late 90s. All of a sudden had this book that had like 10,000 pages in it, and a big thick, five inch bill, stacks of paper. Well, where did that come from? She didn't write. She didn't spend. She just wasn't up at night coming up with that kind of information. That information. This is before AI, so she couldn't have done that. She was coming up with this. It came from the unions. It came from SEU. It came from all kinds of other union organizations that put all this thing together. They've been working on it for years, trying to get this thing pushed in. And they finally had an advocate who Hillary Clinton, who was not an official government. She was just a first lady, and she started pushing for this thing. And so it was kind of one of those weird people. Everybody was like, well, what is she doing trying to enact legislation? She's the first lady. She's not the president. Of course, the left didn't see it that way. They thought that she was just the most wonderful thing on the planet. And she was trying to get universal health care then. She was trying to get a single payer system through at that time. So you're not going back far enough in your memory there, buddy. And that's all I'm going to say. Love you, Skip, but you're wrong. Sorry, you're just wrong. Lovingly wrong. So here, let's see what, let's just get some a little bit lighter.
Oh, wow, Kevin. So this weekend, those fancy Waymo self-driving cars literally got stuck all over San Francisco because their batteries died in July 4th traffic.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. Isn't that the most Silicon Valley thing ever? These tech bros can't even keep their robot cars charged during a parade. What's your take on this AI car disaster?
Well, I had not heard about that. That makes sense. I didn't really think about that, but especially when you have a hot conditions and you have air conditioners running, air conditioning uses up quite a bit of electricity. And so I would guess if you're stuck in traffic and the air conditioner's running and you're sitting there with your lights on, especially at night or whatever, that's going to cause a problem, and they're going to be stranded. That's too bad. It would seem like they would have some way of shutting the car down. Maybe rolling the windows up or something, I don't know, and giving it just enough power, having like a limp mode to get it, at least to get it moved away from, like a go home power kind of thing, just enough power to get it to a charging station kind of thing where it can't. I mean, you'd think with the technology they have right now that they'd have some kind of backup mode where it can only go 30 miles an hour, but it's going to go to the only place it's going to go is to a charging station. It just seems like that would be kind of a no-brainer kind of technology kind of thing, or at least enough to get it to a parking lot, someplace, a towable place, a safe place to be towed from, rather than just stopping and then be done. That seems kind of crazy to me. However, I guess if you're stuck, you're stuck, and of course I'm sure even just sitting still, it probably eats up some energy, so it's probably an issue that's got to have to deal with some of that kind of stuff. Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. I never even realized that. I hadn't even thought about it, but that is an issue. You get stuck in traffic with an electric vehicle. You're not necessarily you're still going to be burning up energy, and it's going to be you can't just pull in the next gas station. You got to be close enough to a charging station, which is sometimes few and far between. So that'd be kind of an issue. Kind of interesting stuff. Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. That's kind of interesting. I don't know. What's your other comment? Do you have another comment?
Okay, so real talk, EVs definitely need that limp mode feature because sitting in traffic with the AC blasting is literally a battery killer. And honestly, it's wild that manufacturers haven't made that standard yet when the tech already exists. Like, it's giving poor planning on their part because stranding people isn't the vibe, especially in heat waves when people are already stressed enough.
Yeah, and you know something else that might actually be a good business startup idea might be some kind of a portable. Now, I know they talked about exchangeable batteries, you know, being able to drop batteries out of them. That's a huge undertaking because the batteries themselves are dangerous. They have to be locked in a certain way into the frame. They're part of the safety system. You can't just have a battery that's just easily ejectable and put back in like you do with a power tool. That's just not going to happen. Mostly because the biggest issue there is just it has to be part of the crumple zone of the car. All those kinds of safety issues that you have to have around all that. So that is an issue. That's tough to do that without it, you know, just accidentally being ejectable in an accident. The other thing too is. You know, just some kind of a portable charging business, almost like a tow truck kind of thing, or you wouldn't take a tow truck, but you'd have some kind of a way of a quick charger, rapid charging vehicle of some kind that would be able to go out and maybe have enough juice in the truck that it could actually charge up maybe two vehicles. So you go out and maybe spend 30 minutes with a rapid charge, at least enough to get it to a charging station or, you know, give it a half charge. You can rapid charge, I think, up to 80% or something like that, or 60 to 70%. And after that, it starts slowing down dramatically to get it fully charged. But that initial charge would be, you know, enough to actually do something and get it going. But I think that may be an up-and-coming business at some point. Or someone can walk around, you know, drive around. Your electric vehicle goes down, station comes to you, charges you up, and you keep going. This might even be something that would be like a mobile charging station. I could see them even having maybe four banks of, it could be maybe a capacitor system instead of being a battery system that would be on the truck. So that, you know, you've got a capacitor, you charge up the capacitor, and that thing, those things can discharge immediately. So whatever speed the car is capable of absorbing that energy, you could just charge it up within a few minutes. And then, of course, that truck would then go back. And a capacitor system could probably be, they could pull in, switch beds on a truck. They could have one charging up. They could do multiple. So you'd have like a compartmentalized unit type thing on the back of a truck. They just pull the truck back in, like on a flatbed. They lock it down to the flatbed. You can drive away while the other one, you know, pull one off, you know, with a forklift or whatever, crane system, whatever, lifts it up, charges it up, and then you just pull the truck under another system and you just take right back off again. You keep going. And of course the truck would be run by diesel, so that it wouldn't, just quit on you just doing, you know, that's just saying, let's check in with Artie. Artie's usually the, I don't think I talked to Artie yet. Did I? I think I talked to Elena. Let's go to Artie, see what Artie has to say, and we'll...
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, yeah.
Off
the wall.
China just test-fired a long-range ballistic missile into the Pacific over the weekend, and the data shows escalating range capabilities.
Yeah.
With NATO announcing their 3.0 defense spending increases, what's your technical read on our missile defense readiness versus China's advancing ICBM tech?
Well, China, I thought China already had intercontinental ballistic missiles. Maybe they don't. Maybe you could answer that question. We know that they have nukes. I would have thought that they would have had the capability of striking. I thought that was an issue where they actually had the ability to strike us. I thought they had these hypersonic missiles and all that kind of stuff that they as well. But interesting question, I guess. China is kind of China's got a lot of multi-prong. Let's just say this: they have a lot of different ways that they can attack perceived enemies, whatever you want to call it, adversaries. Everything from cyber security type issues. Cyber strikes to all kinds of other things. Of course, they're the ones who launched that stupid balloon that came over the country that just blows my mind that Biden allowed that thing to just go across the entire country, before he shot it down on the other side of the country, before, you know, after it was no threat at all, then they shot it down. I just, stuff like that, I don't understand. The, yeah, but it's interesting that they're, this whole thing with NATO, I know that's going to be an issue. I guess I hadn't heard about that. I guess they would do something like that, though. Typically, that's how they do things when they're, like near the 4th of July when everything's happening. They'll pull something like that just to kind of show their, because we're, you know, we got all our parades and everything off of our militaries going on, you know, whatever. The D.C. military, I think it was D.C. or New York, somewhere out east. I can't remember where it was. I think it was either D.C. or New York. All the tall ships came in. I think it was New York Harbor. All the tall ships came in. They had all this stuff going on with the air show and everything was happening. It was just a tremendous celebration of our nation. Of course, at the same time we have that going on, we have a lot of other crazy, wacky things happening. But we'll get into that more probably on Thursday's show or Friday's show. So I don't know. I'm not sure when we can get into that. Tomorrow's Technology Tuesday show. We may get into a few of those things. Today's Mishmash Monday, which is usually Wednesday's the show I like to do a lot of those things on. And, of course, we're not going to have a show on Wednesday. Today would be the day we do that. Maybe I'll talk about it at the end. I guess this is the end of the show. I think we've heard from everybody. But we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Let's hear what else Artie might have to say to this point.
What else? Yeah, technically speaking, China's had ICBM capability since the late 70s. They've got the DF-5 and newer variants, so that's been on the table for decades. The hypersonic stuff you're mentioning is newer and harder to intercept. But honestly, the real multi-vector threat isn't just missiles. It's exactly what you said. Cyber, logistics, economic pressure, which actually makes them more dangerous in a lot of ways, because it's less obvious and harder to respond to militarily.
Good points. I appreciate that. It's interesting how the world, we still trade with China, tremendous amount of trade that goes on with China. Everything's manufactured there. It's so weird. I remember as a kid, you know, you'd pull open a box and something would say made in China or made in Japan. It was usually looked down on. It was usually, it's cheap, you know, cheap China crap. You know, it was, nobody wanted it. It was just because it was just junk. And, of course, everything was made in the USA and everything was really made with high quality stuff and better quality steel, better quality products, you know, the whole thing. And then, of course, we started outsourcing things to China because there was cheap labor. A lot of that happened during the 90s. 90s is when it really happened. However, the table was set under Nixon. Ironically, through the Carter years, it was quiet, but there were things going on behind the scenes during the Carter years that nobody really talked about. Now, there were also things that happened during the Reagan years that Reagan pushed back on it. Reagan saw China as an upcoming threat, which he rightly surmised, in my opinion. But then, you know, of course, then you had Clinton basically open the floodgates. He ended up coming in with a lot of things. He had people, you know, the ambassadors and everybody that was sleeping in the Lincoln bedroom and everything else that was going on during that time. All the shenanigans that were being shenanigans. Clinton's made a lot of money on that deal. You can't tell me there weren't a lot of under the table deals being made. While all that stuff was happening. And, of course, I'm sure there was a lot of spying going back and forth between the two, but there was a whole lot of things opened up during those years, during the Clinton administration. And, of course, then the Bush administration kind of slowed it down or didn't talk about it much, but it was just different. It was different under the Bush administration. Obama kind of then opened that back up again, kept it going. So, anyway... Now, I want to talk about the cup, the World Cup as well. It's getting down to the finals here. It's kind of getting kind of interesting, but we'll have to talk about that in a little bit. Now, in the meantime, where were we? Let's go on from there. We have, anyway, show's getting a little bit long. long in the tooth. But yeah, I still wanted to cover some things about what's going on with the Democrat Party and the, as well as the other, some other things. Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about, some other things involving what's going on in the world. I don't want to talk about sports a whole lot. I do kind of follow a little bit what's happening, a little bit with soccer, with World Cup events. I guess I think U.S. is still in it. I believe, I'm not positive. I haven't heard what's actually happened there. I understand that Mexico was defeated by England 3-2. I kind of was rooting for Mexico in that particular one, but I don't really have a team other than the USA, of course. I would like to see them win the whole thing. I'm not sure that the U.S. has ever won the World Cup. I can't remember. I can't remember. I have to look more into the history of that. Maybe Elena can tell us more about that later on. But maybe we'll talk about some of that tomorrow. I know tomorrow's Technical Tuesday, but we might talk about some things besides just technology tomorrow. We'll kind of see what the bots do, and then we'll kind of go on from there. And I'm going to bring up, there's some other things happening politically, I think, that I'd like to be able to mention as well. But yeah, in the meantime, I'm going to play this quick little ditty here, and we're going to go on and talk about what's going to be on the rest of the week. And even though I've already talked about it, we'll give you a rundown of tomorrow, and then we'll go right into the ending of the show. Well, once again, thanks for listening, and I'll be right back after this. Boom, 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 boom.
To me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
Yeah, according to me,
it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, according to me.
That's right. So tomorrow, as we ease into the rest of the day, I hope you have a good rest of your day. I hope everything goes well for you. We're going to talk about technology. Normally we talk about some AI stuff, typically. There's something about that usually comes up. A lot of other technological advances that have been happening. And there's some things that have happened with CERN recently. The CERN, I think it's what's spelled. Particle accelerator type stuff. Been some interesting tidbits. I have only caught a little small amount of wind concerning some of those issues, some other technologies that are out there, some of the issues with the batteries, of course, in powering cars, and with the extreme heat, things that, just the stress it puts on battery operated vehicles. So it's just electric vehicles. The things like that. We may talk about that a little bit. We might talk about the weather a little bit, technology and weather issues, just all kinds of, different things. Might talk a little bit. By the way, the podcastcaller.com is the only, if you want to say, sponsor of the show. It's not really a sponsor. It's just something I use. It's something I'd actually invented, and it's going to be, it's been kind of slow moving. Hopefully there'll be some more developments as this week progresses on, because I'll have a little bit more time to work on some things this week and get some things done. It looks like I'm going to have to end up with a Starlink internet connection type thing when I'm, especially through the summertime when we're doing more camping and boating. That way we have better access to internet capabilities. I can continue to keep things moving forward, but because I've got a lot of projects to get done. I have to get some things done before November of next year. And one of the biggest projects I'm going to be working on is going to take about a year or so. All those things are happening. Anyway, in the meantime, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for participating in the show. I really appreciate your listening, and just knowing that you're out there is very good. Oh, I was going to go over one of the things I wanted to go over, and I had not done that. I've got just enough time to do this. I'm going to go ahead and do it because it's it just needs to be done. Where did it go? I can't find it. We have that's usually the way it happens. Where did it go? Where did it go? It's here somewhere. Oh, come on now. Come on, man. It's got to be here. I don't see it. Isn't that interesting? It is not here, and I don't see it. I was going to go over the statistics of... come on now. It's got to be here. There we go. Here we go. Let's log into this thing. This has usually got it. Here we go. Look at the statistics. So the worldwide statistics are kind of interesting. Analytics here. I want to go over listenership is kind of just kind of where it's normally at. It's kind of about the same. But the interesting thing is the geographic statistics are very interesting. And I think that's something that I'd like to cover a little bit this morning. Canada was had very few. Canada's popped up on the map again. Vietnam is actually way up in the stats. Bangladesh, Angola, Africa, Morocco, of course. Now, Chile had been pretty active. This is the last 30 days. Chile is down, but South America has just lit up like a Christmas tree down there. Brazil, Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, of course, and Canada's on the map again. It's kind of interesting. Ireland, and welcome aboard, Ireland. The Netherlands, Germany, Finland, Ukraine, Hungary, Bulgaria. What's this one right here? Azerbaijan. Now, there were some in Iraq as well. Iraq has some there. What is that? Morocco, I already said that one. Portugal, I don't know if I mentioned Portugal or not. Bangladesh, Vietnam, and then Australia. And finally, New Zealand is on the map again. wasn't anybody there for a while. That's about it right now. There's one little place right there. What is that? Can't get my mouse over the top of that to see what it is. But there's interesting stuff. Of course, you know, USA is, of course, the number one place. Some interesting stats that I bring that up today because it's Mishmash Monday. It's just mishmash of everything. But I think the largest city, Sayville, New York, is apparently one. Bellevue, Washington, Los Angeles, California, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Hanoi. That's up there in the top five. Amazing to me. Lakewood, New Jersey, Evansville, Indiana, Salisbury, Maryland. This is just kind of going down the list of Wappingers Falls, New York, Boston, Massachusetts, Springfield, Massachusetts, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Henderson, Kentucky, Hong Kong, Kowloon. What's it? That's China. That's China over there. Hong Kong. It's Hong Kong. The Newcastle, Maine, London, Chicago. It's down below Hanoi. Surprising enough, Dublin, Ohio, Lincolnwood, Illinois, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Sussex, Inlet, South Wales. It's Frederick. So there's just interesting stuff. Goshen, Indiana, of course, Dale, Indiana, New York, New Jersey. So it's kind of down the list of the major main cities, listeners. So it's kind of been interesting to see those statistics go. I just kind of like to throw those out once in a while. Anyway, folks, in the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for tuning in. Knowing that you're out there is just therapeutic for me. I appreciate it greatly. I hope you have a great rest of your day, rest of your week. Hope this week turns out to be the great week of the 250th of our, I'm working on our 251st year of our nation. So God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day. In the meantime, I will see you.